Good afternoon. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Happy Friday. Thousands of people will converge in Juneau next week to dance, sing, and showcase their Indigenous culture. Celebration 2026 officially kicks off on Wednesday with the theme Enduring Strength. The Every Other Year gathering began more than 40 years ago, focused on revitalizing Southeast Alaska Native cultures. The unofficial kickoff to celebration happens Tuesday afternoon, when two separate traditional canoes or yak landings will take place in downtown Juneau and the Auk Recreation Area. Paddlers from other Southeast communities, including Sitka, Petersburg, and Haines, will arrive after completing multi-day journeys. The Grand Entrance Parade through downtown Juneau on Wednesday is the official kickoff, showcasing more than 30 dance groups as they make their way down to Centennial Hall. This year's lead group is the Laquilam Gamilget Gadoam Tsimshian Dancers from Anchorage. Other events include the Northwest Coast Juried Art Show, the Native Arts Market, traditional food contests, and the ever-popular Toddler Regalia Show. The gathering concludes Saturday with the Grand Exit downtown. Celebration events will be broadcast live on KTOO 360 TV and stream on cialaska.org and ktoo.org/TV. KTOO's production department is contracted to provide television and streaming services during the event. It operates independently from the news department. And a quick look at weather this afternoon. It is mostly cloudy and 43 degrees out here in Juneau. Tonight, showers are likely, mainly before 1 a.m. On Saturday, showers are also likely, mainly after 10 a.m. We've got 5 cruise ships here in Juneau today. The Disney Wonder came at 6:30 a.m. The last one to leave is the Posia, leaves at 10 p.m. And the Zandam, it also leaves at 10 p.m. This is KTOO. Good afternoon. This is KTOO. Happy Friday. More than 100 Sitkins gathered at the Star Gavin boat launch Thursday morning for a blessing and sending of the ancestral Echoes canoe, heading to celebration in Juneau. Tlingit elders Ed Peel and Harvey Kitka offered a blessing, accompanied by drumming and singing before the 12 paddlers got into the red, blue, and black canoe to leave on their 5-day journey to the capital city. They were accompanied by the FV Anna, a safety boat that will travel with them the roughly 130 nautical miles as a precautionary measure. Celebration is a 4-day event organized by Sea Alaska Heritage Institute that takes place every 2 years. Started 44 years ago as a way for Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian people to gather and celebrate their cultural survival. This year, the theme is Enduring Strength. Sitka's canoe is expected to arrive in Juneau on Tuesday morning, along with canoes paddling from communities across the region. And the state's first Justice Summit for Alaska's missing and murdered Indigenous people got underway earlier this week in Anchorage with a call to push harder for healing, learning, and action. The gathering opened on an emotional note with a keynote speech from Abigail Echohawk, director of the Urban Indian Health Institute in Seattle. Echohawk was raised in the interior Alaska community of Copper Center and spoke about her own trauma.
I was 6 years old the very first time I experienced rape. Sometimes, even now, as a person who sometimes gets triggered by the work that I do, I can close my eyes and feel the pain.
A pain that Echohawk says almost led her to take her own life at the age of 9. At the time, she didn't know her father had contacted state troopers.
We knew who the perpetrator was. The conversation that happened was basically ended up like this. She's an Indian girl. We don't have the resources nor the time. Just keep him away from her.
Echohawk helped to lead a study that examined more than 500 cases of missing and murdered Native women. She says the findings confirmed that more than 1 in 5 cases did not exist within law enforcement databases.
So we actually found in this snapshot of 71 cities across the United States that the data was not there, and it was, in our minds, purposefully being held back and not being collected.
Echohawk says Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau were included in the study. She says law enforcement cited classification methods and what they described as vulnerabilities in Native culture, explanations that Echohawk says reflect systematic racial bias. But whatever the reason, she says the lack of data has real consequences for Native communities because it limits resources for investigations, healing, and community safety.
This isn't a handout we're asking for. This is justice we're asking for.
The summit wrapped up in Anchorage yesterday. And oil prices are going up because of the war in Iran. And in turn, prices of plane tickets have increased. Some of the hardest hit passengers are those in Unalaska, an 800-mile plane ride from Anchorage. KUCB's Sophia Stewart Rossi reports from the remote Aleutian Island.
Locals rely on air travel to get to and from Unalaska. More than 4,000 people live here year-round. It's the biggest fishing port in the country by volume, and it's a hub for the smaller communities in the region. But flying here comes at a high cost. The closest city is Anchorage, and a round-trip commercial ticket can cost over $2,000. Resident Jackie Clifford Walter says the rising cost of airline tickets sometimes makes her feel stranded.
I just don't know if it'll be tenable for a lot of folks to live here anymore.
When fuel prices nearly doubled nationwide because of the U.S.-Israel war in Iran, flying to the island got even more expensive. Clifford Walter says if tickets climb much higher, her family may only be able to leave the island once every other year.
Just don't know how practical that's going to be.
Josh Jacko is the general manager and owner-operator of Denina Air, a charter company that flies regularly to and from Unalaska. He says raising prices is the last thing he wants to do, but the costs keep adding up.
We'll eat a little bit of it, you know, but not too much.
Denina added a 2.5% surcharge to all its charters in April. Jacko says he held off at first, absorbing the cost while other companies raised their rates, and only added the surcharge once Anchorage jet fuel topped $6 a gallon.
We do have to think about keeping the doors open.
The only commercial airline for the island is Aleutian Airways. In an email to KUCB, a company spokesperson says they made several scheduled changes in April in response to limited jet fuel supply in Anchorage and rising fuel prices. Aleutian also added nearly $34 per flight to Unalaska and to St. Paul. The airline says the charges are tied directly to fuel costs and are not permanent. Grant Aviation flies from Unalaska to neighboring communities in the region, like Nikolsky, Akoon, Atka, and the Pribilofs. Grant didn't immediately respond to an interview request, but its fares don't appear to have changed online. Some of the airlines buy their fuel from Delta Western. Delta Western has supplied fuel to Unalaska for decades. In an email, the company says its delivery and inventory fuel cycles help cushion customers from sudden market swings, but the company did not say whether their fuel prices have gone up. Jacko with Denina Air says fuel is only part of the picture. Since the COVID-19 pandemic, the cost of aircraft parts and labor has climbed sharply, and he says the costs keep stacking up. Parts, labor, and now pricey fuel to top it all off.
How much can you charge before the consumer decides they just don't want to pay? You know, how high could you go before the consumer decides, forget this, we'll walk?
So when will prices come back down? The U.S. Energy Information Administration expects oil prices to ease later this year, assuming the Strait of Hormuz in the Middle East opens up. But the federal organization doesn't expect prices to return to pre-war levels within the next year. In Unalaska, I'm Sophia Stewart Rossi.
And May in Utqiagvik means whaling. But the community just landed its first spring whale last weekend, very late into the season. As Elonia Nyden reports with the Alaska Desk, whalers and scientists blame unusual ice conditions.
Chucky Panicek-Hobson has been whaling for about a month before he landed one this spring. He captains one of 8 boats and crews that worked together to catch the first whale of the season last weekend.
It was definitely a long season. I told my crew at our next opportunity we're going to take that chance. And that very same next day, we got onto that whale and my crew didn't hesitate to take it, to strike it.
By this point, Hobson says Alaska's largest subsistence whaling community has typically landed 10 or more. But this year, Hobson says, the ice edge is rugged, with very few flat spots for pulling up a whale. And there is a lot of young, thin ice, too weak to hold big whales. In fact, when the crews were pulling up the 50-foot whale last weekend, some of the ice broke under it. And Hobson thought they were going to lose a lot of the harvest.
And once it got to the thicker ice, we were able to get it up. You know, the community coming together, we were able to harvest the whale and get it to the ice.
Daxi Moore was one of the hunters who helped the Hobson crew land the whale. He says it has been a challenging season with hunters searching for whales small enough for thinner ice.
People were getting frustrated, you know, people get hungry for muckduck. It was good to see everybody's spirits flip when Chucky landed that whale.
Utqiagvik, like other coastal Arctic communities in Alaska, relies on whaling as a crucial food source and to maintain Inupiat traditions. The town has a quota of 25 bowhead whales a year, and residents spend weeks and sometimes months preparing boats for the season, hunting, processing, and celebrating their harvest. Whalers and scientists agree that ice conditions are unusual in Utqiagvik this year. Andy Mahoney is a research professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Geophysical Institute. His team has been monitoring Utqiagvik ice conditions remotely and on the ground.
We have noticed that the ice is rougher this year, certainly than last. But I think what's making it challenging for the whalers right now particularly is where the ice is rough. And there was a lot of new ice added fairly late in the year.
Mahoney says that normally, young ice forms earlier in the year. Then windstorms push the new ice against the existing shore-fast ice to create ridges. By whaling season, the ice consolidates and thickens.
The key part of it is timing. And I think what happened this year was those storms just didn't happen until later in the year, so the ice wasn't super thick.
Mahoney says the shifts in climate also affect the timing of the storms. This winter was quite cold in Utqiagvik, but the Arctic overall is warming faster than the rest of the world.
In a warming Arctic, these sort of events are going to become more likely. It's not just the warming and thinning of the ice. Conditions will be more sensitive to a sort of a mistimed storm if the ice is already thin.
Back in Utqiagvik, Hobson says that after landing the whale, the crew spent 2 days processing it on the ice. Then they shared some of the harvest with the community, a little taste before the big whaling festival that usually happens later in the summer. On Thursday, Hobson was headed out to the ice again to try to land another whale for the community. He says he really hopes that first whale won't be their only one of the season. In Anchorage, I'm Alona Naidin.
I'm Clarice Larson, and this is KTOL.